Shisara Kona Kumara. Welcome to Satsang. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, BBS family, and Happy New Year. It's really good to be with you live again. We took a few weeks off, and now we're back, and I am so happy to have our Satsang family back with us. We're going to go ahead and get started tonight, so take a nice deep breath, and I will clear the space. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one shaft to surround each one of us, and I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity, and I place myself in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions, and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Come on back to me. So I'm Shisara Kona Kumara. You're listening to Satsang. I'm the founder of the Kumara Center for Spiritual Awareness. I'm joined tonight by PLEN, Megan, Tim, and Linda, some of our core council members. And looking forward to speaking with you all tonight. I had a little moment of panic before the show started. I just put a piece of chocolate in my mouth. And then I was told the intro was starting, so I was feverishly trying to get it out of my mouth in time to do the protection. So give me one second while I take a drink. PLEN, say hi to the people.
Hello, people.
Well, that was great. Okay, just quickly, I don't like to... kind of create the have our sessions so that they're very time specific, because we archive the programs, and I like all the programs to be something that people could listen to at any point and have them be equally relevant. So I don't generally talk about, you know, current events or things going on at the time of our airing, but sometimes I feel like I need to, since I've people listening, and it's always good to get information out when it's when it can make the most impact. So right now, when I was doing this in Charlotte in our session beforehand, I was kind of letting everybody know that right now there's like a really big movement of the collective energies. Of course, going into the new year, there's always a shifting that occurs because it's like the year wraps itself up and then we move into the next year and we move in from a different place. And of course, the influx of energies that occurs at the new year is also really powerful. So what's going on right now is that, and you're seeing it in the world, so you're seeing a world in turmoil, and the turmoil is being experienced, you know, multiple countries have real big issues going on all at the same time. And so collectively, you've got humanity all dealing with lots of stuff. And people in their individual lives are experiencing that, and then and they're experiencing it in their individual world. So you've got people who feel very like they're being pulled in every direction possible, or like they're being just like the life is getting squeezed out of them. You have a lot of the experience of feeling like something has to give, or I don't know how much more of this I can handle. Like, I feel like I'm at my limit. I just can't take anymore. Okay, if you're experiencing any of that in your world, understand that the level of energy that you're feeling there is not specific to just what you're experiencing in your daily life. You're experiencing the energetic of the collective, which is far stronger, and it permeates anyone who's in form here, right? If you're in form, doesn't matter the level you're functioning from. If you're in form, what's happening on a collective level, that consciousness, it's going to pass through your beingness, okay? All of it. It all does. So you will feel it. Now, some people feel it more than others, but I'm telling you, if you're really struggling right now because you moved into the new year and you're just like in a place of, I just don't even know where to start. You know, there's so much that has to be done that I can't even begin to get to. It has like paralyzed me. I don't even know where to begin. That kind of thing. It's that. So be kind to yourself. Be gentle. Know that the collective is moving through a lot, and don't get overly attached to any story, you know, specifically in your own life. Let it run its course, you know, show up, do what you can, but don't be overly attached to the outcome of what's going on right now, because there's just an awful lot moving. And I find for people it's helpful when they know that, because once you have an understanding that you're also, not only are you, you know, experiencing your own world, but you're experiencing the world of the collective. And remember that as God, you are single. God is single. And so is the lower mind, single. So that polarized consciousness that has been identified with is single. And what does that mean? That means you are the collective. You are the collective. And the more dissolution that occurs on a personal level, the more that is felt. There comes a point in every seeker's journey when you're doing very serious dissolution work where the story stops being personal, and then what you end up doing is viewing all the stories from the level of the collective, because they're no longer are they about you. It's about the collective, which is you, and not because there is no you within it. Paradoxical. You kind of got to try to stay with me there. Feeling lens give me a weird look over there. It's hard to talk in paradox, but very necessary. All right. So what do we want to talk about? What do we want to talk about, Pielian? It's been a while.
Actually, if people would like to visit our website and go look at our archives, they would see that there's a whole archive on paradox.
Did I do a show on paradox?
You did. And why we do it.
You wouldn't happen to know when that was.
No.
You're going to make people sift through 2 years of programming to find it.
No, but there's descriptions for everything.
That's true. So hopefully in the description, I wrote something about that paradox.
Yeah, so they could check us out on the KumaraCenter.org.
KumaraCenter.org. Not the. Just to make sure we're clear with, with our listeners. KumaraCenter.org. I think if they type in the, they'd get taken someplace else, wouldn't they? They'd hang out there in cyberspace someplace. They wouldn't land anywhere. I can't hear you.
It's good to know because I thought we were the Kumara Center, but it's on my, like, it pulls up automatically for me. I'm on it so much. I don't even.
We're so proud of her. Oh, it's a good thing you're pretty. That's great. Okay. I'm teasing her and she knows I don't mean that. Okay. What are we going to talk about? Let's see. Feels kind of weird to be on the air again. What are we going to talk about? What did we talk about during session? It's gone for me already. Food. We talked about food, didn't we? That took an interesting turn. So I'll bring that up here. Why not? So a lot of people who, you know, are on a conscious spiritual path do get really locked, really polarized about the whole food thing. And it's so unnecessary and so not, you know, conducive to higher levels of awareness. Now, don't get me wrong. That doesn't mean that it's bad to be discerning about what you put in the body. It doesn't mean that it's wrong if you're studying with a certain teacher or a guru or something and they advocate a vegetarian diet, you know, and coming from the East, a lot of gurus would. There's nothing wrong with that. Of course not. The problem comes when you get polarized over it. So I was saying earlier to the group that I had a student at one point who really just constantly gave me a hard time because I eat bacon. I mean, really would give me a hard time. And I enjoyed playing with him about that. So I would like send him pictures of a bacon on my plate. I go, ooh, you know, I like pig. Oh, do I have a preference either way? Would it be okay for me if I didn't eat bacon? Sure, that's fine. That's fine. I, you know, do I feel like it's not okay to eat bacon? No, not at all. Why would I polarize either way? And that's the point. Is it wrong to be vegetarian? Nope. Is it wrong to be vegan? Nope. Is it wrong to eat strictly a Lay's potato chip diet? No. You may not feel great doing it. It's not wrong. None of it's wrong. It's all God. It's all God. You eat God, you drink God, you breathe God. And that's the reality of it. So why get polaroids? Polaroid? What did I say? Polaroids. I get polar. She's in rare form tonight. Why get polarized over any of it? Can it be true that eating an all non-animal diet can make you feel lighter, can make you maybe even more attuned to energy? Sure. Sure. Does that mean you should do it? No. Can you? Absolutely. Do you have to? Well, I guess that's up to you, right? Now, there might be an occasion where maybe you do have a teacher who says, you know, if you want to follow my path, you've got to be a vegetarian. That's fine. So be a vegetarian. But what I will tell you is that at some point, if you are a dedicated seeker, that has to fall away from you. It has to. You don't transcend the world of duality by carrying duality with you.
I mean, you know, I just had this image in my awareness of someone, some, you know, devout vegetarian seeker who comes across Jesus in a restaurant and he's sitting there eating a steak. And the seeker completely loses any sight of who he sees because he's judged him based on what he's eating. And what a shame that would be, you know? The projection is the thing that's gonna stay with you and it's gonna trap you. Projecting that it's non-spiritual to eat meat. It's ridiculous. That animal that's being consumed is just as much spirit as the one consuming it. How could it be non-spiritual? Just as the plant one consumes is just as much spirit as the one consuming it. And this is one of the, you know, one of the kind of dangerous things. No teaching is wrong. And no teaching is inaccurate when viewed from the level at which it pertains. You see, all teaching has its place, and all teaching is accurate when seen from that level of awareness. However, it doesn't mean it remains accurate all the way through, does it? If you're going to walk the walk of non-duality, true non-duality, that means any place that polarization is held, any place attachment is held, any place resistance is held, resistance just being the opposite of attachment, all has to fall away. You can't call yourself a student of non-duality and maintain that it's wrong to be anything, or that it's wrong to do anything, or wrong to eat anything, or wrong to drink anything. Everything has its place, and it's just a matter of where you're viewing it from. When you truly function in that space, it's very confusing to the mind in the form of people. And I had a student who used to constantly be like, I just can't figure you out. It's like, what's to figure out? And there's a beautiful introduction to the book Initiation. And in Initiation, it's a book by Elizabeth Haish. She was a yoga instructor. An enlightened being, and wrote her journey, which is, it's a beautiful book. Highly recommend it. But in the introduction, one of her students, or the foreword, whatever it is, but in the beginning of the book, one of her students says of her, because she was his teacher, that she was always a different person. Now, how can that be? She was always a different person. Because personality is only a construct of the lower mind. It's only a construct of the ego, of the sense of the personal self. And when there is no longer a personal self presenting, and the only thing that presents is the self, capital S, the personality doesn't exist. So how that personality appears is constantly changeable. Independent on whatever needs to appear in the moment. That's why I will challenge anybody who comes up to me and says that a master or a guru or whatever you want, a yogi, whatever you want to call the person, a guide, a teacher, always, any true teacher, any true guide, always functions like this. Oh, I beg to differ. If you believe that, you are mistaken. And you're holding on to something that is highly polarized. There are a lot of people walking the planet that think that any true teacher always functions from the space of love. And when you say the space of love, what that means is that it's the concept of love that a polarized mind has come up with, what it means to be loving. The polarized mind can't see tough love as love because it doesn't feel good. And so it can only see love as the things that leave it feeling safe, feeling happy, feeling accepted. Can that be love? Sure. Is that all that love is? Heavens no. Everything around you is love. You just can't see it for what it is. It's all love, because that's all that is love. But the polarized mind can't experience the world that way. So it has to qualify everything, and it has to label everything, and now this is loving and this one isn't loving. And so what is the concept of love based around? So we'll go back to the thing with the guru. I love this because it's just so perfect. So you have one student who has a guru who only ever coddles the student, only ever places their arms around the student and says, I love you. God loves you. It's okay. It'll be okay. And then you have another teacher with another student who says, I love you, but who will also turn around and say, look at what you've done. Why did you do that? Sometimes even that was wrong. Ooh, does that feel loving? A teacher that even would scold a student? Anyone who knows anything about Yogananda knows that his teacher, Sri Yukteswar, was not the cuddly little teddy bear of a guide. It's very stern. Why? Because it got the job done. What was he there to do? What's he there to do? Is a guide there for you to coddle you? To allow you to be complacent? To make you feel better in your illusion? Really? Now, some guides will do that based on where their students are functioning from. Because for some students, they need that for a while. Yeah? And then for those same students, at some point, that's got to end. Because that becomes a trap in and of itself. And it's up to the guide to discern when necessary what that student requires. Because they can see it. The guide can see it. The student isn't going to see it. Are you kidding me? You think a student knows what they need? Megan, do your environmental biology students all know what they need when it comes to what they do in school? No. Well, how could you? You're there to learn, right? That's what I love about the whole, you know, being a seeker. Is all the people running around the planet feeling like, I know what I need. You don't know what you need. If you knew what you needed, you wouldn't be here, first of all. Because you would have done it by now, if you really knew what you needed. So everyone's running around just looking for the thing that makes them feel good.
Well, of course, because that's what the mind does. Pet me, coddle me, love me, affirm me. Make me feel good. Of course, it's the voice of patterned consciousness. Please make me feel good, because the bottom line is I can't feel good. The voice of the ego. I can't feel good. I'm not capable of moving myself to a place where I can maintain feeling good. And whose fault is that? Well, God's fault, of course. If it wasn't for God kicking me out and not letting me back in, I wouldn't have these problems. If it wasn't for God pretending to be one thing and then acting another way and showing me something else, I wouldn't have these problems. If it wasn't for God lying to me, rubbing my face in my failure, I wouldn't have these problems. God becomes the ultimate scapegoat. An ego experiences it every day, and all the people around it, all of those that you want to blame every single time, whether it's your wife or your kid or your cat or the weather or a coworker or a crack in the sidewalk. Whatever it is you're ticked off about, that represents God to the ego. There's one story playing out here, people. It's not you versus your wife and you versus this and you versus that. It is the ego versus God, and that is the only thing happening here. It just gets hidden behind the identification that's going on. But the ego, the personal self, spends all of its time just ruminating in its sense of victimhood. And then taking that sense of victimhood and either throwing, projecting blame out onto God as the world, or trying to pay penance, do what it can, make things right, and grovel its way back to God. And that's what it spends all its time doing. Or there's a third. It'll spend its time giving the proverbial middle finger to God. The I don't need you. I don't want you. Get out of my life. I can do this on my own. And we call that self-righteousness. Ego spends a lot of time there too. That's the only thing happening here. It's not personal to you. As an individuation of the divine, that thing that has the story, whatever your story is, whatever your story is, If your issue is about family members, if your issue is about money, if your issue is about career stuff, it's all the same. There's no differentiation between any of it. It's all the same. The bottom line is the issue is between fallen consciousness and its sense of separation from that which it is. And that plays out as ego versus the divine. The shadow versus the light. Why do we all love stories like Star Wars, good versus evil? Because that's exactly what's playing out in this reality. Good versus evil. And good always triumphs.
Ultimately, of course, because God can't lose itself forever. The eternal cannot eternally lose itself. But in this reality, the dark side keeps on running, doesn't it? Does it need to change? Does the dark need to get converted to the light? No. Did she just say that? Oh my gosh. Yes, I did. Because it doesn't need to do anything. It doesn't need to do anything. The only thing that has to happen is that the one perceiving it has to change the way it views it. To see through the charade. There's no dark, evil, good birth versus good and dark versus light. It's all the one appearing as it all. And the consciousness collectively on the planet has so polarized over everything that now humanity is living a hell reality, living in a hell world where it all really is convincing and seems to be extremely accurate and very true. And you get people really involved in, the reptilians. Oh my God, it's the reptilians, and the reptilians are, you know, they're doing what they do, and they don't have any hearts, and they're, you know, sucking the energy out of people, and they're fourth dimensional beings, blah, blah, blah. Is it true? On one level, yeah, it is. It is. But is that the level that you're going to function from? Is that where you want to function from? Because once you move up past that level, it stops being true. And they pose no threat to you whatsoever. At a certain resonance, things that don't function at that resonance don't even come into your awareness. They can't. You want to open yourself up to anything evil, anything bad? Spend a whole bunch of time focusing on it and getting scared over it. It was actually very cool last night. We were watching a TV program called Supernatural. You ever heard of that show? It's been running for like 11 years, right? So we just started watching it on Netflix. We're on like the very first season. And they did an episode where there's a demonic possession thing going on. And it's causing plane crashes. And so these two brothers that basically hunt down, you know, evil spirits and stuff are on the plane together, knowing that this demon is looking to possess somebody, and they're trying to get it intercepted so the plane doesn't go down. And the one brother is scared to death to fly, right? So he's all agitated, and he's getting all worked up, and the other brother says to him basically, look, you got to get it under control. Like, do whatever you got to do you got to calm down, because right now you're completely open to demonic possession. And when I saw that, I was like, that's very cool that they actually put that in a program, because it's true. Is it true that, you know, you can get entities can attach themselves to you, your auric field, and actually sap energy from you? Yeah, it's true. Is it also true that you're far more likely to have that happen when you're in an altered state due to drugs or alcohol, being around a whole bunch of people who are also drinking and doing drugs? Absolutely. Which is why you don't see a whole lot of hardcore seekers out bar hopping. You don't be walking around with open chakras in a crowded bar. You'd be like moths to a flame, right? There's a level of discernment you have to function from, and it all comes as you come into greater and greater levels of understanding and awareness. Of course, not everybody knows that. And it takes someone like me to tell people, look, this does happen. Is there a reason I do a protection every time we start a program? Yeah. In highest truth, is it necessary? Of course not. But is it necessary for the people here
identified as polarized consciousness, you better believe it. And I'll tell you, the only people who don't need a protection are the exact people who will never have an issue doing one in the first place. Because why would they polarize over it? Exactly why anyone who has higher levels of understanding is perfectly at home in any place of worship. Synagogue, cathedral, sweat lodge. It wouldn't matter where they are, perfectly at home. Because why would they polarize over my God, your God? It's all God. And if I walked into a church, you know, which I have done, I'm not a Christian, but if I walk into a church, will I take holy water and do the cross? Sure, why not? Why not honor that tradition? You'd be like, oh, but you're not Christian. So what? So where are you hung up in your world? And where are you ultra polarized? You know, I'm guessing the people who are listening aren't, you know, sitting at the layer of just being polarized over like sports teams. Hello, that's a real good one. The identification that goes on with people in sports is really something. But you see why they do it, yeah? Dallas is my team. Okay. And I have someone in my life, I heard a comment recently about, Charlotte, right? So we live in Charlotte, and our football team is on its way to the playoffs and potentially the Super Bowl, which would be a really cool thing. And so their last game, the game was sold out, but the stadium wasn't full because the weather here was crap. Remember? It's been really cold here, unusually cold. And it may have been rainy too. And so someone around me made a comment about, oh yeah, Charlotte, you know, they're, what was said about it, about the Charlotte fans are like fair weather fans. You know, meaning that when the team's great, they show up. When the team stinks, they don't. And it was used as a judgment. Like, those aren't real fans, you know. So let's say this guy was from Green Bay, you know, would show up shirtless at a game. Right? 25-degree weather in flurries. There's from Wisconsin and wears a big slab of cheese on his head. Right? That's a fan. And they're incapable. See, the identification is so strong with what it is to be a real fan. I'm a real fan. I'm a diehard fan. I'm not one of those, you know, sissy fans where everything has to be perfect and the team's got to be doing good and all that. You know, and then the thing is that strikes me so funny is that there's no objectivity to it. So if you look from an objective place, you could go, well, you know, in anything else, if, let's say, you know, you support the ballet and you go to the ballet seasonally, and one year you go to the ballet and the troupe really stinks. Are you going to go to every ballet just to suffer through it? Or do you support them when they bring the talent in? When they really get it together and you lend your support? Because I'm in favor of you really working hard to put on a great show. Right? And in anything else, that's acceptable. If your symphony stinks, who's going to show up? You know? And are you disloyal because you stop going to the symphony when all you catch are all the incorrect notes in the brass section? No. But in football, or in basketball, or hockey, or pick your sport, we're supposed to what? You know, show up and watch our team tank week after week after week and defend them to the last. You see, it's very twisted. And so anyone who's functioning from that level of identification, they just can't see past it. So if you bring them that, if you bring them, you play devil's advocate, which is very fun to do sometimes. So you bring that forward and you say, well, you know, but look at that. The team stinks. Should they have people filling the seats when they aren't bringing their best to the table? Or is the lack of people in the stands an indicator that you guys really need to get it together to bring the people back? And someone who's that identified won't even be able to see it. They get all angry with you. They get all angry with you. No, a fan's a fan. So where are you hung up? Where are you hung up? I get to work every day 5 minutes early. And every time I see that girl come in 5 minutes late, I get that much angrier. Because she's a crappy employee. I'm a stellar employee because I get there 5 minutes early. Right? I don't understand why she doesn't get in trouble. She must be doing favors for the boss. Can you see where it's going? This whole story that'll build around the identification. And in my identification with being the perfect employee, I have to see anything that's outside of that as separate from me and wrong. And I can stand in the place of judgment and feel justified for doing it. And I can especially do it, going back to the whole, look at PLN, the demon thing. I can especially do it because there's a piece of paper that I had to sign when I became an employee that said when I had to be to work and when I was allowed to go home. So there's proof. There's actual proof. If you show up 5 minutes after 8, you're late. Ergo, bad employee. If I show up 5 minutes early, I must be that much better. I don't have to be there till 8, but I show up at 5 minutes till. Right? I should get brownie points for that. And so this concept is insidious, and it works its way into how you view your world and who you believe yourself to be in the world, and it colors your perception of the people in your world, and it makes you incapable of seeing things outside of it. What it does is it builds this very tiny little, you know, prison cell that you exist in. Tiny little world, you know. It's all about you, you see. It's all about you. And from the level of the personal self, that's true for everybody. It's all about you. Me, 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 me. That's why I always called it the me monster with my children, because I couldn't explain the ego to them. So I used to say the me monster, because it's all about me. You did this to me. She said that about me. And the me monster doesn't stop until it gets what it wants. Sometimes what it gets is something that makes it feel good overtly, you know, like makes it happy. Like someone who gives you a big hug and says, oh, I love you, right? And sometimes it gets what it wants in reverse, as the opposite of that, which doesn't make it happy in the traditional sense, but ultimately it makes it happy enough. It may not seem like it's happy, but it actually is. It serves its purpose. So something will happen, and then from the ego's perspective, it'll feel justified in the judgment that it holds and in the anger it feels for it.
You see, and that's all it needs. That's all it needs. It just needs to feel justified in it. Because if it can feel justified, then that means I'm right. You see, and within that, there's a sense of, I wouldn't call it happiness, but there's a sense of, what are we going to call that? No one's helping me. There's a certain word. It's not coming to me. Pillion, you got any ideas?
Well, it's not self-righteousness, though, right?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely self-righteous because the judgment's there. That comes out of self-righteousness to begin with, the judgment.
But you're saying there's another...
There's
something.
A payoff to it. So when you can pull forward a justifier, especially a benevolent justifier, right? That's something that you can feel good about the judgment.
Validated.
Validation. Yeah, that would work. Yeah. So not necessarily a sense of happiness, but if you feel validated, would you not think of that as a positive state of mind? Right, you would. So there's a swing that happens there. It doesn't necessarily leave you all like, you know, light and bubbly. You may still walk away shaking your head or walk away grumbling under your breath, but you'll feel vindicated or validated. Yeah.
Linda said satisfaction.
So, yeah. Okay. Satisfied. Yep. Yeah. So it will always get what it wants. What was that? 4 minutes? Is that what you're telling me? Okay. 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 What else do I need to say about polarization? Probably the best thing to say is that it's not you. It's a very tricky thing, this waking up work. Because on one level, you work it as if it's real. Because you have to. Because consciousness is identified, and because of the identification, it's truly trapped. It is enslaved in the system. And that's the best word for it. It's enslaved in the system. So wherever you are now, in whatever your life circumstance is, you know, it is a dream. And you may be living a hell dream, or you may be living a heaven dream. The dream might be really easy here and really beautiful and really satisfactory, but it's still a dream. A happy dream is still a dream. I think that comes out of A Course in Miracles somewhere in there. Jesus says something about that, you know. But a happy dream is still a dream. So this is what's going on. You've got the dream state personal self scrambling to create a happier dream and doing everything it can think of to make a happier dream for itself. But the true seeker says, forget the dream. Whatever it takes, the point is to wake up from the dream. So if the dream has to be ugly, make it ugly. If the dream has to be hard, make it hard. It's okay, because I'm not the dream. I am that which is greater. And even though I can't see it now, even though it's not my experience now, I know that to be the truth. And that's the foundation of what has to exist for anyone to literally walk off the life-death cycle. If you aren't willing to go in and do the dirty work of waking up, you won't. You won't. It's really that simple. And some people are okay with that. I mean, there are a lot of people who could care less if they wake up. Even when they understand that they're in a dream state, they're okay with that. Right? And that's fine. And some people only want to do work to a certain level and then they just want to coast from there. That's okay. You can just do that. You come into the level of understandings that you do and do your best from there and know that next time, you know, you'll come back and you'll start over again. That's okay. You could do that as much as you want. But for any seeker who's going to wake up in this lifetime, the desire has to be so strong that you will be willing to do whatever it takes to unravel it all. To end the sense of identification that has resulted in the belief in polarization. Because that is not what you are. That is not what you are. Heaven is right here and right now. There's nowhere for it to go. It's a state of consciousness. There is only here and there is only now. And it is here to be experienced by all, or I should say by the one as the all. And the only thing stopping that from happening is the sense of identification with separation. But you aren't that. And if you strive for something more, then start making it an inner call. You know, go into prayer over it. Ask to be shown more. Really put yourself out there to yourself, to God. Put yourself out there. Look, I want to wake up. Please lead me wherever I can for my highest good. And if you truly do that from a very humble place and a very honest place, you will start to see things pop up in your world, and it will lead you piece by piece and step by step. Okay. On that note, it's time to go into meditation. So it was a privilege to be with you again tonight, and we will be back with you next Thursday night for satsang. Thank you so much. We love you very, very much. Have a beautiful meditation. Good night.